Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here for hour two on the 14th of January. We're covering so many of the different headlines and topics, and there certainly is a lot to get to here on a Monday morning. It was a very busy first hour with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, as well as Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, talking about different dimensions of gender and politics and the wall and the shutdown. So much to get to on a Monday morning like this. And related to the shutdown, I see that our friends in Canada and our signal does extend into the Canadian network, that the Canadian air traffic controllers are sending pizza to unpaid Americans who have been affected by the shutdown. Canadian air traffic controllers, more than good wishes, they're sending pizzas to folks who missed their first paychecks on Friday. It started when controllers in Edmonton, Alberta, ordered pizzas for crews in Anchorage, Alaska. Through the weekend, other Canadian controller units along the border sent pizzas to the U.S. controllers who share the airspace. The campaign continued to spread, and the president of the Canadian Air Traffic Control Association says his members are now sending pizzas to controllers all over the United States. So I know the news can get difficult at times, but it sure seems like regular people walking out regular life like you and me, that there is a capability of just doing some nice things in this world and bringing a bit of levity and hope to so much of the difficulty that seems to be going on in our country. Well, up next, we'll take a short break and we'll be joined by Jacob Schatzer, who is Assistant Professor of Theological Studies, Associate Dean of the School of Theology and Missions at Union University. And pretty interesting moves going on in our country in terms of this idea of transhumanism, or people and scholars and scientists asking what's next in the evolutionary journey of the human race. And I'm going to ask Jacob about some of those topics and how we as Christians can think about that here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We are joined at this time by Dr. Jacob Schatzer, who teaches at Union University. He's an assistant professor of theological studies, works at the School of Theology and Missions as well. Good morning, Jacob.
Hey, good morning, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you on the program on this topic, Jacob. I mean, you have four children at home. I have five children at home, and I just wonder about what their life is going to look like 20, 30, 40 years from now. I know places like Google have opened up think tanks to think about what is the next, in their mind, evolutionary part of the human race. Are our kids going to be plugged into some sort of a computer from a consciousness standpoint and can live 400, 500, 600 years here? Jacob, what are we talking about when it comes to transhumanism?
Well, you know, I think some of those details are anyone's guess. I sure hope not in some ways. But I think when we're talking about transhumanism, we're looking at this really big conversation, like you said, about what exactly is next for those who view human progress as something that's significant and to pursue and that could potentially move beyond being human. This idea of transhumanism is a commitment to use whatever we can to move on to that next stage, to become more than human.
And what are people suggesting might be the trajectory for the human race? If you have the assumed worldview that evolution is true and what is happening within the human race, are there some people suggesting this is what's next for human beings?
Well, I think that a lot of times when we think of transhumanism or when we might catch it in our culture more broadly, it's connected to this story about technology, you know, this idea that we create these powerful technologies and that we have this ability to change ourselves. And so we see this in pop culture. You know, there are certainly various Netflix shows and things like that promote this idea of a future where we've merged with machines, or maybe the machines have taken us over, or maybe we've been uploaded into computers. And oftentimes we just keep transhumanism at arm's length because we think it's only about those kind of big, far off things.
So, and Jacob, you released an article here on the Gospel Coalition. People can find the work that you did, New Year, New You, The Allure of Transhumanism. And if they want to go to thegospelcoalition.org, you can find this article that really is an interesting one in chronicling what is maybe the problem and what are some of the issues related to this. So if I was to ask you the question, how is this an issue today? Why should I care about this idea of transhumanism as a believer? What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, I think that the place where it's really important for believers to think about isn't necessarily in those big picture, far off things. I think many Christians know enough or have enough of a reaction to think, you know, I don't think I want to become a robot. But the problem is, I think that transhumanism is much deeper than that. There's a logic to transhumanism. There's a story to transhumanism. And it's one that's actually very close to stories that we buy into. And so that's what I try to do in this piece with the Gospel Coalition and in a book that I've done on the same topic, is point out that there are actually these smaller decisions that we make on seemingly less significant things, but that tie into this same story and make us more likely to, in the future, want to be part of the transhumanist story.
Well, and you lay out some really helpful steps in terms of understanding the process in which people engage when they start thinking about transhumanism here. And that first, the step is a mouthful. You reference it as morphological freedom. I'm not even sure I can say that this morning, Jacob. But what are we talking about here in terms of sort of the right to morph ourselves how we see fit? Is this talking, and you reference the idea of, is wearing sunglasses or getting some sort of surgery or something along those lines what we're talking about? Or is it something distinctly different where we try to morph ourselves to be more happy, I suppose, on some level?
Yeah. So this the first step is kind of the moving towards these extreme versions is, yeah, a tough term, morphological freedom. But basically, the freedom to change ourselves however we want to. And we're used to this in some ways. There are some ways that we need things. I'm wearing eyeglasses right now. And we're also used to, you know, selecting our clothing, what we want to wear to look a certain way. But transhumanists take that idea of the freedom to use tools like eyeglasses or to wear clothing. And they say, look, there's not really anything different between, your freedom to put a pair of glasses on and your freedom to, create a third robotic arm that's connected to your brain somehow that you can control. If you want to do that and it's not hurting anyone, you have the freedom to do it.
So do things like stem cell research and maybe growing new organs based off initial stem cells to replace, if let's say you had a dysfunctional liver or a kidney or something, I know that there's work being done in the biomedical field that would say that we can go ahead and grow ourselves some new organs and maybe put them in a bank somewhere to use as needed. Is this part of that kind of freedom you're describing, or is this more of a technological thing?
I think it's part of that, but especially what they're looking at with morphological freedom isn't just repairing deficiencies. Which I think often those sorts of that sort of research is aimed at is fixing something that's broken, and that's a separate argument, obviously, on whether or not growing organs is a Christian approach to that. But morphological freedom, in particular, just wants to erase that distinction between repairing something and enhancing something, and saying either one, it's up to you. If you want to repair something that's broken in your body, hey, it's your choice. If you want to radically change your body, if you want to add magnets under your skin or RFID chips like the, you know, tap to pay type stuff that we see in commercials, if you want to embed one of those in your skin, hey, go for it. Change yourself.
Talking with Dr. Jacob Schatzer this morning about some of the different movements in our country and some momentum around the idea of changing oneself, becoming more than human, taking advantage of technology to do so. And Jacob, I have to stop for just a minute before we go through some of these steps and ask you the question around putting chips under our skin. I have to say that that calls to mind some of the great warnings of my youth, in which the idea was is that if you put a microchip under your skin and could pay for groceries that way, pretty soon the government could control you. And this is the first step to the mark of the beast. I'm sure some listeners are familiar with that idea, Jacob. Have you heard this kind of reference point before?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know that we necessarily have to connect it there for it to be concerning either way. But yeah, certainly. And there, a lot of the problem is these things sound extreme. But there are people that are doing this already, just self-experimenting, putting those sorts of things under their skin and using them. And really what I want to draw out it's easy for us to see those things and think, oh, well, obviously I'm not going to slice open my finger and slide a chip in there. But there are choices that we make every day about our interaction with technology that actually aren't that far from the very same values that promote that worldview.
Well, and once we take those steps, Jacob, where we're willing to embrace technology in this way to sort of change the way we function as human beings, there's a few more steps that begin to follow, and we start seeing more and more the difficulty of this subject. So when we come back from break, I want to ask you about the next step in this process that has to do with augmented reality and tying it into things like Google Glass and Pokemon Go and some of the other things that are sort of all the rage in our country right now. So get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined by Dr. Jacob Schatzer. We've been talking a bit about the topic of transhumanism this morning, and the context in which we're using that is human beings taking technology and augmenting themselves or enhancing themselves as perhaps the next move in what some people consider to be an evolutionary journey of the human race. And Jacob, we are chatting a bit about once we embrace the possibility of using this technology to augment ourselves, we do head into this next step that you outlined, which is an augmented reality, and how we understand and perceive the world is now being, using that word, augmented by technological means. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so with augmented reality, we're really getting at the fact that we might like to think that our tools are very separate from us. We can pick them up when we want to use them and put them down when we're no longer interested in them. But in reality, especially with these technological tools, is they're so immersive and they're so tied into the way we exist and the way that we see the world that they really change our experience of reality.
And as we head into that realm, whether it's a Google Glass or Pokemon Go, there's another step that we end up taking where there's a third step in this process that you outline. And that has the idea of not just augmenting our reality, but beginning to somehow put our mind and our memories in a memory bank of sorts. And it's an interesting concept, Jacob. We were watching as a family, the show Scorpion that I think is on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something now. And it's about these geniuses who are working for the government. And in one of the episodes, one of the geniuses is trying to save his sister's life, who is dying of MS, and his method for doing so is to try to raise enough money so that he can figure out how to upload her consciousness into some sort of technological bank so that, you know, in the future, he can sort of restore her consciousness with a new technology body.
Yeah, and I think that the way that these are connected is what's interesting, is often Christians hear those kind of scenarios and we think, well, those are so far off, that's of course just a TV show, but then we turn around and we see ways that we're already able through Google Glass or through just any smartphone to experience reality in a different way, to augment and kind of combine the digital with the real. And it's that combining of the digital with the real that begins to filter and change reality for us. It changes what we see. It changes the way we experience God's world. It changes the way we interpret God's world. And as we become more and more comfortable with that kind of existence and an augmented reality, we might be tempted to think, hey, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so bad to just live inside of a computer. So there are these small steps. If you look at the last one, it seems like a big step, but it's these small steps in between that shape us, that disciple us, and I think actually lead us in that direction.
Well, and you point out after this, too, that we're in a realm now where Christians are uncomfortable. And you write, as followers of Jesus, we worship a God who took on flesh, who became a person in order to redeem humanity. And then these words I thought were terribly compelling here, Jacob. You said that salvation for Christians isn't an escape from the biological to the digital, for God has redeemed the biological in Christ. What are some of the impulses? What are some of the motivations in the way you see it that humans are pursuing this kind of escape to the digital as opposed to leaning into Christ for the ultimate redemption of the biological?
Yeah, well, I think that these sneak in really sinister ways. It's really easy for us to think that what the problem really is something biological. The problem that we really need solved is something that technology can solve. And if only we could do that, then everything would be better. I mean, you see this in the way that social media was initially popularized, right? the idea with something like Facebook is, well, what's wrong with your life? What's wrong is that you just can't connect with your friends quite as easily as you would like to. So here, we'll provide you with this platform that enables you to find all of your high school friends and connect with them and talk. And that's not really the solution to the loneliness that we feel. Ultimately, we need a relationship with Christ, and we need to be built up in the body of Christ in the local church. And so I just think there are little things like that where the digital provides this glimmer of hope because it somehow ties to something that's a problem, but ultimately it fails to deliver on what we really need. And we see this in various ways. And I think the more and more we move away from local embodied expression of the faith to digital disembodied expression, we're moving in this direction. We're moving away from the communities that God has called us to.
Well, and that does have relevance for what has been a pretty significant movement in many parts of our country in Christianity, and that we do interact with our faith through digital means only, whether it's streaming sermons live in the comfort of our own home, so we think. But there is this increasing lack of human interaction, and without that, we do begin to take on sort of different realities as people if we're not in face-to-face conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And those things aren't necessarily bad. It's not, of course, bad to listen to Christian radio or to listen to sermons online and to help ourselves grow and learn. But the problem is when people think, oh, I don't need to go to a local church anymore. I don't need Christian friends in my area. I can just listen to the best sermons in the world online, and I never need to interact with anyone. That's not what Christianity is. I mean, even Paul, right? Paul used the technology of letters, which we don't tend to think of as a technology if we even write them anymore, but he wrote and sent letters, right? But in his letters, he said, I long to be with you. And so even Paul was using this technology to provide great theology and ministry, but he still wanted to be with people. And I think that it's that sensibility of togetherness that connects with being embodied creatures and Jesus coming in the flesh, not in a text message, that's significant for us to remember.
Is there any of this that connects to some of the time of Paul as well, Jacob, in the sense that the city of Corinth was a place when Paul wrote the letters to the city of Corinth and to the Corinthians there, that some of what he was addressing were people that also believed that they could expand beyond the human race? In their case, it wasn't technology. They thought they were sort of becoming androgynous, angelic beings that were too big now for the human race. This seems to be some sort of impulse that isn't just true of today's generation, but human beings seeking to somehow transcend their own humanity.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that's one of the responses to the fall and one of the responses to our sense of limitedness and our sense of alienation and our sense of something is wrong. We look for solutions to that. And any solution that we find outside of Christ is just deceiving ourselves. And so I hope that as Christians try to engage technology and not run from it, but seek to wisely and carefully engage it, we can acknowledge that look, it's coming with a story. It's coming with a promise that only Christ can rightly make. And I need to listen for when that promise is being made by technology. And I need to ready myself to resist that promise and remember that Christ is the only hope that I have.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, we have just about a minute left here. I'd be curious, though, to get your insight and maybe some wisdom into the idea of how do we balance the desire for better life and better quality of life as human beings around the world with the idea that ultimately our lives do fail. We live in a broken and fallen and corrupted world that does need to be redeemed. What's the balance between seeking a better quality of life and recognizing that we are frail and broken all at the same time?
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly difficult balance to find, and I don't know that I have the answer for that. I think that one piece of the answer might be seeking the balance even that we find in Scripture. We often in those times drift towards the passages that just talk about how perfect everything is going to be in the end, and those passages have their place. But we also need the Psalms of lament, and we need to remember that sometimes the right response to the brokenness that we experience is not to figure out how quickly we can fix it, but instead to sit in that brokenness and cry out to God and name the brokenness for what it is and to call out to him and remind ourselves that he is our only hope, even as he graciously uses many of these technological advances that we've talked about.
Well, Dr. Schatzer, I sure appreciate your insight into this topic. It's one that I was not terribly familiar with in terms of the term transhumanism, but it sure seems to be showing up in a variety of ways in popular culture and media. So thanks for giving us some wisdom into this.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We'll take a break here for some Breakpoint and some bottom of the hour news. And Dr. David Aikman will be with us in the second half of this hour. And there's a pretty big Brexit vote happening in the United Kingdom tomorrow. And I'll get his thoughts on that topic here on Faith Radio Mornings. I always appreciate Breakpoint and the insight that comes from their program there and just the time they take to really investigate matters in our culture. And Rachel Sutton and I, during a Breakpoint, we're also thinking back to the transhumanism conversation we just had with Dr. Jacob Schatzer. And Rachel sent me a link, and Paul Perot a link, to the Virtual Reality Church. Pretty funny YouTube video. Highly recommend, if you're listening this morning, to go to YouTube and search for Virtual Reality Church. Speaks to the next iteration towards which we're headed. I spent the break trying to convince Rachel that I actually represent the next version of humanity, and for some reason she wasn't buying it. Good friend of the program, Dr. Gary Stratton, joined us last Friday, and we were talking about how difficult it can be to bring our hidden sin into the light and how that really reflects on our understanding of God. And Gary was talking a bit about how things that happen in childhood can really impact this.
You know, it's all through our childhood. Certainly there are those pre-language things that can be incredibly powerful, but it's really our overall experience of life, and so our birth order makes a difference, whether our family faced things that were traumatic to us as children. I mean, we had to move because we were in the military, or my mom had a tremendous illness with a second kid. I mean, there's all sorts of things that shape things. One of my best friends from New England, his older brother had a terminal disease in the entire, and who he eventually cured of, but it was a cancer, but his entire childhood was revolved around his brother's terminal illness. If that can happen in a family system. And he just came to this conclusion that I just don't exist and I don't matter. And he just lived his whole life like that, not recognizing that was the conclusion that underlay everything he was doing. So, yeah, it's powerful stuff.
Yeah, it was a really interesting time with Gary last Friday. Again, I recommend going to myfaithradio.com and searching for that segment from last Friday and hear all of what Gary had to say on how our childhood can really impact our views of God. Well, up next, we'll be joined by David Aikman, who joins us on Mondays to cover events from a global standpoint. David wrote for Time Magazine for the better part of 20-plus years and is now an editor for Godspeed Magazine and just brings such great wisdom into so many of these topics. And I'm going to ask David about the imminent withdrawal of our troops from Syria as well as the Brexit vote that's happening tomorrow.
Can you guess what your teens want more than anything? It's not a new car, more money, or a new cell phone. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. You know what your teen wants? It's control. When it comes to making choices in their lives, teens want three things. They want to make their own decisions, they want to control their destiny, and they want opportunities to prove their maturity. Don't you want the same? Of course you do. No parent wants to babysit their teen when they leave home, so help them gain control in healthy ways. When a child is 12, give them more decisions to make each year. When they reach 18, they'll be making decisions on their own. Mom and Dad, you must start transferring control early so kids get practice in making good decisions.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
I always love that intro. That means that Dr. David Aikman is joining us to talk about some of the global headlines from a Christian standpoint. Good morning, David.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing pretty well here, but it sounds like you're a bit under the weather. You got a pretty good cold raging from what I understand.
That's right. Yes, I have, unfortunately. You get it during the windy season here because the winds come in from the Irish Sea, from the UK, and the Atlantic. And where they meet together, the temperatures really plunge. So it's not a very good time to be around Ireland.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but thanks for plugging through and joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings. And I know there's quite a bit to get to in terms of some of the headlines with Syria and the Middle East. And, of course, the president, from the way it sounds, surprised quite a few people when he made the announcement that we would withdraw from Syria and bring our troops out of that location. And now that seems to be starting. What are some updates on the situation, David?
Well, of course, Erdogan, the president of Turkey, got very antsy with President Trump when Trump said that he would actually protect the Kurds from being attacked if they were attacked by the Turkish military. And Erdogan got very peeved about that and said that wasn't any of President Trump's business. But of course, in the last few days, the Israelis have had some attacks on the Iranian supplies coming in to equip Hezbollah forces in Lebanon. And oddly enough, the Israelis, who usually don't comment on their attacks in different countries in the Middle East, admitted through the Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu that they'd actually initiated this attack, essentially giving a warning that if the Iranians continue to try to open a land passage between Iran and Lebanon and Syria, the Israelis would interfere with that.
Well, it was a very unusual move, from what I understand, for Israel to go ahead and acknowledge that they did the attack. So it sounds like these sorts of things happen maybe somewhat regularly, but they're a little bit below the radar, as it were. It really was, in at least your best read of it, a situation in which there wanted to be more of a public warning given to not keep going down this road?
That's right. I think they wanted to make it clear that they wouldn't countenance the kind of supplies that are going on that Hezbollah is using to build these underground tunnels between Lebanon and northern Israel. The Israelis have found and destroyed, I think, six such tunnels so far. And what the Hezbollah was planning to do was to get the tunnels operating and capable of accommodating a large number of troops, and then they were hoping to plant a flag on one of the Israeli settlements or housing communities in northern Israel, but they won't be able to do that right now.
Well, and another bit of related news from that area, we see that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo gave a speech in Cairo in which he very much came against and really rebutted President Obama's policy of sort of going on what was described as an apology tour for the way that Americans have treated people in the Middle East. And, of course, Israel is the primary ally for the United States in the Middle East. And he really tried to take a different tack, but at least for some people, there was a sense that it backfired.
Well, yes. I mean, Pompeo took the view, which anybody who was working for President Trump would take, that the United States suffered from the lack of respect that its foreign policy received in the Middle East. I mean, not only the refusal to react when Syria crossed the red line and actually used chemical weapons, but many other things that Obama said he was going to do, in fact, that he didn't do. And I think he was responding to the sense that the U.S. was basically not involved in the Middle East to the same degree that it had been under previous presidents.
Well, changing some of the headlines away from the Middle East and Syria and over to closer to where you live, David, I know you're in Ireland, but in the United Kingdom, we see a pretty significant vote happening tomorrow. And of course, people have said these are significant votes. These are moments in the past in this 2-year Brexit process. But this really is sort of that red line, that threshold moment where we see it being put to vote to the Parliament tomorrow. Theresa May's idea of what it means to leave the European Union. And it sure doesn't seem like she has the votes to make this work.
Yes, she has an agreement with the European Commission that was agreed to by all the member countries of the EU that there would be certain terms for the departure. And most of the members of parliament, whether they support remain or they support leave, basically felt the terms of the agreement were completely unfair. For example, the Northern Irish DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, which props up the government of Theresa May, said that it would amount to being held hostage by the EU for an indefinite period of time. And so it looks as though she won't be able to get the votes to pass this agreement in the House. And what that will lead to is anybody's guess, because Theresa May said that the result of a rejection of the agreement could be absolutely catastrophic. The military has already been called in to help supervise the arrangements for leaving, which will take place March 29, and to ensure that there's as smooth as a possible changeover if there is no deal. And no deal is disliked by everybody, except probably a few of the very ardent Brexit supporters. But everybody is very concerned that there could be a catastrophe in trade between the UK and the EU unless an agreement is actually reached before March 29.
Well, I saw Theresa May coming out yesterday and saying that if people do not support her vote tomorrow in Parliament, that the odds of it maybe Brexit happening at all go down significantly. That, as you've referenced, most people are against the idea of a no-deal Brexit. So she believes it's going to open up some space for people to say we should have a second referendum, we should delay Brexit, maybe we should do away with it altogether. And in her mind, that would be catastrophic for politics moving forward.
Yes, I think there is a small minority, well, maybe not a minority, maybe actually a plurality of MPs who actually are ardent Remainers, and they would like to see a second referendum, which essentially they hope would reverse the results of the first. But this would be a catastrophic precedent, because if you had any future parliament saying, all right, we're going to leave this vote on any issue to the British people, and we will honour the decision they make. Any British population faced with the fact that the previous cast iron referendum had been disregarded would put no trust in the democratic processes put forward by the British Parliament at all. So it's a very hazardous situation right now.
Well, it'd be fairly easy to anticipate a significant level of rioting, since there are millions who did vote to leave the European Union, if the Parliament can't actually go through with that. And David, when we come back from break, I would love to talk more about that piece of it, but connect it over to some of the populist movements in France that we see with the Yellow Vest movement, as well as populism in the United States, and where we seem to be headed globally on this topic. Before the top of the hour, we're chatting with Dr. David Aikman about some of the global headlines. And David, one of the things you and I have talked about pretty consistently these past several months is that it sure seems like history books, if we could look at them from the future perspective, will look back on this time as a time in which there was a pretty significant global backlash to globalization and just sort of the interconnected world in which we live. And we're seeing populism happen in with Brexit. We see populism in France. We see it here in the United States as well. And this is one of the significant risks, isn't it, if the UK government doesn't actually leave the European Union? Some of the populist riots might dwarf what's happening in France right now.
Well, yes. I mean, there could be a serious backlash in the UK if those who support Leave think that their vote in the referendum has been completely ignored by the British government. And I think I do agree with you that there is an overall backlash against these multilateral organizations, like the EU and, of course, the UN also, and a strong conviction by increasing numbers of government that the old system of a national state standing for itself is the best way to protect democratic values of government. And very interesting that the commentator Victor Davis Hanson, who is a classicist and a historian who comments from Stanford University, from the Hoover Institute, he compared this sort of mood in the United States and in part of Europe today as sort of a Weimar Republic. Well, the Weimar Republic refers to the period that Germany was in between the First World War and the rise of Adolf Hitler. And, of course, the Weimar Republic provided a lot of the ammunition for Hitler to demand the reorganization of Germany and an ending of the Versailles Agreement. So there's a lot of sort of revanchism, if you like, going on in many parts of the world, rebellion against the inexorable process of globalization.
Well, and it seems like some of the people who are championing more of a populistic kind of move, whether it be in France or in the United States or in the United Kingdom as well, aren't necessarily saying we want to stay disconnected from all of the rest of the world. But there's a sense in which they want to assert some sovereignty of their own nation and their own way of life as they also develop proper kinds of trade agreements and immigration kinds of agreements with different kinds of countries.
Yes, and I think part of that is actually a peasant's revolt against the control that the elitists seem to have both in the United States and in many European countries over the opinion and policies of the people that they rule over. A sense that the people in charge or the establishment, whichever it is, are disrespecting the ordinary common sense desires of the mass of people, the peasants, if you like, at the grassroots. And they want to reverse that process whereby everything is going to become more progressive and more globalist.
Well, and that certainly, we have a couple minutes left too, but that certainly is what we see in France right now. From what I understand, is that Macron was elected and really championed the idea of reasserting globalism and the ties to the European Union, but his approval rating has plummeted below 20%, and he's having a very difficult time interacting with his French constituency.
Well, in France, and indeed in Germany, one of the more troubling signs for some people on the European scene is the emergence of a desire for a European army. And this initially was mooted by Macron, but Angela Merkel of Germany has also proceeded to support it. And it's not a very popular idea. The desire of ordinary Europeans to become a sort of military superpower is relatively limited. There's not a real European patriotism underway, and I don't think anybody wants to see one.
Dr. Aikman, we're just having a little bit of a tough connection. We caught the last point there, but boy, we really appreciate your time just walking us through so many of the complexities of the global headlines. And of course, with the Brexit vote happening tomorrow, it's going to be really interesting to see what that means, not just for the United Kingdom, but for the rest of Europe and even indeed the entire world. So thanks for joining us. And we at Faith Radio Mornings, Rachel and I and Paul, we all wish you the best to get through the cold and looking forward to chatting with you next week.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Take a break here and wrap up our show for the 14th of January on Faith Radio Mornings. Wow, that really was a jam-packed morning here for a Monday morning on Faith Radio Mornings. I hope as you listened, whether it was Brandon Showalter or Adam Carrington, Jacob, what was Jacob's last name? No, I forgot about it. I couldn't pronounce it the right way. Schatzer, yeah. On transhumanism. Great stuff. And, of course, David Aikman, one of our favorites. Again, bringing so many of the headlines from a Christian standpoint. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you tomorrow morning on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.